Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 7th. I'm Ray Graff. It's a beautiful day today. It's a great day to look up at the sky, at the birds. And we'll talk about birds for the next hour with our favorite experts, Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. They're here to share their knowledge and answer your questions. If you got a question about birds, 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can do as many people have already done. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, and the number is 800-348-2551. It's Birds, Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, and you coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Bird Day today, and Julie Hart is here. Rich Guthrie is here. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC, and now he's the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. We're very lucky he's in the studio today because the dude gets around. Julie Hart is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. You have a bird question, this is the time. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Julie Hart, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This is exciting time for you with the Bird Atlas, yeah?
It is the time of year. So, we are just kicking off our final field season, and we need all the help we can get. All of the birds are coming back right now. Everyone should be having their hummingbird feeders out and maybe some oranges out for those, or grape jelly for those orioles and all that kind of stuff, and things are just hopping every day.
It's pretty exciting this time of year.
It's super exciting. You know, not only do we have the trees flowering and the warmer weather, but all the birds singing, and they're all getting on their territories and starting to nest. And so, yeah, we need as many people out there as possible.
Well, how do people find out and sign up, et cetera?
Yeah, so you don't need to sign up. You just have to submit data through eBird, and we have a special portal for the New York Atlas. They just need to visit ebird.org/atlasny.
Okay, and we'll talk more about this as we go on. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to New York State. Nice to have you here.
Hey, great to be here, and I picked a nice day to choose to be here.
Yeah, really great. We were talking just now about how many birds are out there, the amount of noise created by birds. It kind of sank in this weekend, just how loud it is. I was out taking the air at about 5 a.m. last week, and there was this bird, Rich, you probably know it, just you could probably imitate it. It was a terrifying sound. I didn't know what the heck it was. The sun was, you know, barely up at 5. I mean, and it was like this high-pitched warbling, but it went on, and it was louder than blazes. Like, it was so, but it was way higher than that in pitch. And, then my wife and I were out over the following days at night, and she said, oh, yeah, that's a screech owl, but I'm not convinced.
Well, it could be. Yeah. The screech owls, well, right now, they are tending to their young. They hatch out a little tad early. And they're working on raising their babies and defending their territory. They don't really screech. They do have a warble, a nice wobbly sound.
Can you imitate it for me?
I can try. Here it goes.
That was it. That
nice.
Was definitely it. But it was so loud. You know, if you're tending to your young ones, do you really want to advertise where you are? Because it was, I mean, you could hear it across the neighborhood.
It's probably feel threatened by another bird encroaching on its territory. A lot of times that's what it's all about. They have no patience for intruders.
And maybe I was the intruder.
Well, I don't think so. I think give yourself some credit that they weren't afraid of you so much as they were the other little. And the screech owl's a tiny little owl. There's much to it for all that noise. And they are a powerful little bird for their size. And they're found in so many different habitats, from countryside hedgerows to the woods, the open woods, the edge of the marsh, and even in downtown cities. I remember walking past a pair every day in Syracuse, New York, on my way back and forth to classes. And the little screech owl. And again, they have that wobbly, little wobbly sound that you heard.
They live in hedges or trees, Julie? Where's their preferred spot?
So they're actually one of our bird species that lives locally that likes to use boxes, nest boxes. So they'll use like a small wooden box on the side of a hole, or they'll use natural cavities that they can find.
So they're going to be inside a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But if you start to look at holes, like woodpecker holes and things like that, if you ever see a little face peeking out at you, it's probably a screech owl.
Well, the weird thing about this was it was doing that warbling sound really loudly. And I'm outside, and I walk over to the edge of the patio, and it stops. Mm-hmm. And then I walk back, and it starts again. So maybe it was really close, and I didn't see it.
Yeah, that's usually the case. They're so well camouflaged. So many people walk by this tree in Syracuse that I mentioned, and other places. I had one on the road nearby my house, and where people walk to the post office. And so many people walk by without any knowledge that they're there. And they just sit there looking back at you, knowing that you can't see them or thinking you can't see them. They're confident in their little disguise outfit.
All right, let's grab a couple of emails here before the first break, and then we'll go to the phones. A few open lines left at 800-348-2551. Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie are here. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. This one came in this morning from John in Saratoga. Would you be willing to talk about purple martins? Does our area in Saratoga allow them a good habitat? I understand these birds are ideal natural way to control some insects. Additionally, could you comment on the type of proper house, wood or plastic, etc.? Lastly, the ideal height that it would work on a poplar tree 12 feet high, which was lopped off with a square cut to form a platform. Sorry for the long-winded request. That's all right, John. Very nice. John in Saratoga Springs.
Well, we are at the fringe of purple martin territory or distribution. However, Saratoga Lake area does have a healthy population of purple martins nesting in the vicinity. The Hudson River Valley, not quite so much. But nonetheless, the ones up in Saratoga, purple martins are colonial nesters. They like apartment condominium style structures with multiple holes. And you'll see a lot of these that apparently were housewarming gifts given to people that are placed in totally inappropriate sites. They're never going to be a purple martin in that house. But given the right place and the right location, they can be there, especially if you're in the Saratoga Lake area of New York and in the Hudson Valley down further towards New Paltz and towards the city, or perhaps in the Connecticut River Valley.
All right. Julie, you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think he asked about the height.
Yep.
I would say 10 to 12 feet is probably about right. Definitely want to, well, he said it's on a tree, so
right.
Really move the tree.
No.
but you definitely want to be near a field so that there's plenty of food for them.
Yep.
Near some water, preferably. As Rich was saying, there's several different styles of housing. You can get, like, it looks like a little house with lots of little holes in it, or you can get the gourds and you get a bunch of gourds that have holes in them, and that's another popular
gourds
type of gourds.
Go figure.
Well, they used to make them out of natural gourds, but nowadays they make them out of plastic gourds that you can buy commercially and put them out there, two or three or four on a row, like on a clothesline. And then, you know, what people have done is they put a little silhouette or cutout of a purple martin to lure the fellas in.
Oh, come on.
Oh, seriously, because they do need a little salt to get themselves situated, started. A little trust factor.
Wait a minute. A cutout of a bird. Now, we've seen the fake owls on top of trees that do absolutely zero to keep the pigeons.
They make nice perches for the birds, for the pigeons.
And you're telling me a cutout of a bird is going to work?
Yeah,
yes.
And for some species,
really?
It's almost essential. The fellas, Stephen Kress out there in Maine, put up these cutouts of puffins to attract them to nest on an island where they used to nest but stopped nesting. He put out these little puppets of puffins, and sure enough, the island now has puffins nesting.
I'll be darned. Why don't you just go to a taxidermist and get an actual one and put
it
out there?
No, get the plastic one. Get the paper one.
Or wooden, yeah.
Okay, this is from Tim in the 845 who says, Rich, Mom says hi from Rochester.
Hi.
Hi, I don't know what that means.
Well, hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. apparently a fan. What are your thoughts on the very touchy issue, says Tim, of feeding birds during the summer? I know suet is bad, but still have seed left and hear a grosbeak in the area.
I'm all for it. No, keep it up.
Yeah,
keep
me too.
Just watch out for the bears. You know, make it bear-proof, bird-friendly. Suet hummingbird feeders. The suet cakes work through the summer. They're made so that they don't melt or go rancid, so they can, and the birds will come right to that. And as Julie said, put out the orange halves out there for the orioles and the hummingbird feeders. And if you have a seed feeder that won't spill on the ground so much, use that too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else from them?
No, I mean, I do keep my feeders out as long as I don't hear of any bear reports or see any signs of bears. But if I do, then I start, they keep them in and I have them out during the day, but take them in at night, that kind of thing.
All right. This one's from Mimi in Germantown, and then we'll take a break. Mimi writes, I've been birding Claremont Historic Site over the last 5 days. It's been jumping, and I have only done the flagpole area and the lower parking lot area, since that's where I'm concentrating a walk for the Germantown Garden Club next week. A more thorough exploration is in the works. I'm sure there are oriole nests in progress. The bluebirds are busy. Keep conservation on County Route 8 is usually very productive with varied habitat, often yielding good raptors over large open fields at meadows. Finally, eagles about guaranteed at the Anchorage Landing in North Germantown. Well, I didn't hear a question there, but it's all very interesting.
Well, she's very right.
Yeah, she is correct.
Germantown on the Hudson River Valley in Columbia County, New York. A wonderful, wonderful place. It's a state park, and it has wonderful walking areas around there and great potential for any birding, atlasing, and sharing information.
Which,
eBird did that.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. I was just going to say that, a lot of those observations that she was just listing are breeding behaviors, and so those are exactly the type of thing that you would want to submit through eBird in the New York Breeding Bird Atlas portal. Oh,
you know, we had this bird's nest under our overhang.
Oh, nice.
Which miraculously is now gone, but no birds were harmed in the process. So the birds, my wife said the birds came back the other day, and they were quite romantic. She had to turn away. This is the bird breeding behavior.
This is time.
That's, they don't even need a room.
Copulation is, yeah.
Well,
it's
the world is their backyard.
Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. It's birds. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. It's birds today. Julie Hart is here and Rich Guthrie as well. And let's go to Kinderhook Lake. Christine, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a bird that's nesting on top of the light over my front door, and I don't know how to make it stop trying to nest there, and I don't know what kind of bird it is because it's too high up for me to see.
Welcome to
any
my world.
Any ideas?
Well, welcome to our world. That's congratulations, I think. It depends on what kind of bird it is. And one thing about birds building nests is that they're very tenacious. They pick a spot, and they want that spot. No matter what you do, they will keep trying and trying and trying. I would suggest perhaps at a time, first of all, you want to get there before they lay eggs. Once they lay eggs, all bets are off. They're protected and they're home free.
What do you mean they're protected?
They're protected by federal law and state law.
No, really?
Yes, indeed. Most of the birds, the very few, and there wouldn't be the ones that would be nesting on top of your light fixture. So, but if you could get there before they build a nest, or before they lay the eggs, I should say, and let's, you know, put something over it to discourage them from coming into it. Paper bag, perhaps a box or something on top of the nest to make it inaccessible to them. They're going to have to move on.
Julie, what about a cutout of a bird? Can we do that?
I mean, if it covers the top and there's nowhere for them to nest, then yeah,
they actually won't frighten them away.
It might frighten them away, or there's just not a good substrate for them to build a nest.
Yeah.
Then. So yeah, I would get a ladder and look inside the nest, and if there's no eggs, I would remove the nest.
Okay,
if it's a problem, yeah.
Can you get up that high, Christine?
Yeah, they just started. Yeah, that's good. I'll let you know what happens, but that's what I'll do. Thank you.
It's exciting. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, and good luck eradicating the nest.
Well, I have a bird nesting on my porch, and she's more than welcome to stay. I tiptoe past the nest when I go by, and she sits still. Sometimes she gets spooky and flies out, and I know.
What kind of bird?
A cardinal.
Well, they're very fantastic.
I have them in my front.
They're so trusting, and I think they know that they're in good hands. Maybe I'm stretching it a little bit too.
Yeah.
It was while I was away that she decided that my porch was going to be home. There was a robin also building a nest in the same trellis work, and she got smart and left. She didn't come back again before any eggs.
You know, we have a lot of cardinals, and they're pairs. Julie, we talked about the amorous relations of some of these birds in past shows. Are they monogamous? Do they stick together for a long period of time?
Cardinals do, yeah, and they'll actually stay together even in the winter. So some birds are just paired up during the summer breeding season, and then they split up for the winter. But cardinals do tend to stay around. They actually have this really cool thing I just want to share because so they'll have multiple broods, which means they'll have multiple nests throughout the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually take turns and they split up the duties so that the male will take the young from one nest while the female goes and starts to lay on eggs of the second nest. And then that way they can like fit in more nests and get more young out per season.
That seems like an evolutionarily wise decision because, you know, you're ensuring the next generation and this one. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the cardinal, too, is that the female cardinal is one of the few North American female birds that actually sing. And the cardinal on my nest will sometimes fly out from the nest, perch in a nearby shrub, and start singing. Again, cardinals are one of the few that females will sing. Rosebreasted grosbeak females will also sing. They don't always get the words right, but they make up the tunes as they go along.
Let's go to Woodstock. Catherine, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure. Go ahead.
Hi. So we hung our bird feeder up high up from our pergola, high enough we hope the bears won't get it. But then the squirrels did. So my husband put a big reflective metal disc on a strut over, hanging over that. Mm-hmm. And a cowbird just became obsessed with this. And he spent about 3 days pecking at it like it was a rival, sitting next to it. But no other bird, and we have many, many birds of all kinds, cardinals and grackles and goldfinches, doves. No other bird was interested in this. We finally took it down. We didn't want this bird to just starve to death attacking this phantom foe. But are there other birds that would do this? I've never seen behavior like that before.
Yeah. Cardinals.
Yeah, many other birds. Cardinals and robins and blue jays and some of the others will react to their reflection. I'm surprised that a cowbird would.
Yeah, me too.
They're not territorial.
Yeah, he just sat there. I mean, he was there for 3 days. We finally just took pity on him and took the reflective disc down.
That's interesting.
That's interesting, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and also usually when we see cowbirds, they come in a huge flock.
Right.
But this was a solitary one.
You sure it was a cowbird?
How do they? It was definitely a cowbird.
Okay. Well, that's interesting both ways because they are gregarious. They come through. Right now, they're migrating through and moving around so that you'll see larger flocks than later on. But good for you though. They're gone.
Julie.
All
right, Catherine, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. To Burlington we go. David, how are things in Burlington? Not that good, huh?
Hello, Burlington. Come in.
Hello, Burlington. rats.
Rats, yeah.
How about Westerlo? Joseph, you're on. We're not hearing anything, Zach. What's going on, baby?
Is there an Easterlo?
Is there an Easterlo? That's a great question. And you know what? We'll have to talk about that for 32 more minutes. It is no calls. So we have no sounds.
Can I? I'll just... It looks like, from the little snippet we have on the screen, that they were going to ask something about hummingbirds. So one thing to note, Rich and I were talking about before the show, is that some of the birds are arriving early this year, and including hummingbirds. So I've already got hummingbirds at my feeder. Rich, you said you don't have hummingbirds yet, but people should have their hummingbird feeders out already. It is time.
Well, let's see.
Totally agree.
Let's see if Joseph is in Westerlo and can hear us. Joseph.
Yes.
Oh, there he is. Hello, Joseph.
All right.
Welcome.
Peace. Hello, guys. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
I'll dispense with the mandatory. Can you hear me? I'm sure you can. Okay. So here we. I always feel like I'm doing a phone commercial or something.
Right.
Anyway. Here's two things. First one, I saw my first hummingbird defecate in front of me, and it was glorious. Most people would be repulsed by it.
Congrats.
But I found it.
What a start. Okay, yeah. Keep going.
Just thought, hovering on Monday, I think it was, first one, female, she hovered, and I flew up to a maple, and I followed with my binoculars, because you don't normally get to see a perched hummingbird.
Mm-hmm.
And then she let it fly for me, and I was thrilled.
Terrific.
Anyway.
That's great. Anything else?
I knew you'd like it. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Better story. I was out mid-morning, midday maybe, looking at the grass that has not been mown yet, which I appreciate. Dandelions, hundreds if not thousands of dandelions.
Mm.
And also I looked down and beneath the bird feeder, at least 24 of these dandelions rose up into the air and flew up into a maple tree.
Oh, good for you.
And I'm sure Rich knows what I'm talking about, right?
Sure.
What are we talking about?
The flying dandelions, American goldfinch.
Oh, I see.
Gotcha. Yes. American goldfinch.
Yes, nature's a little alchemist.
It was gorgeous. Okay, now here's the question.
Oh, boy.
Sun started going down, rain, all the dandelions closed up. Finches were still in the trees and on the feeder, but never went down to the ground again. Are they using that as camouflage, do you think?
Nah.
The dandelions?
Nah, there's probably the flowers. No. The dandelion flowers are probably drawing in some very nice insects, some of these pollinators.
Insects, yeah, okay.
And so the goldfinches are saying easy lunch.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
but nice
sense.
Thought, though. I like your thought.
Joseph, you're in the running for the call of the show here today. That was something.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll expect a check in the mail.
Okay,
well, wait till you see the prize.
Yeah, it's public radio, so you'll have to pay us. It's funny. Let's go to Kirsten in Wilton. You're on.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome.
Good. All right. So my question is, a few weeks ago, and it's been going on ever since then, is we have a female cardinal that's flying into our kitchen window. It's sort of a small bay window. And it keeps flying into the window, and we don't know what to do. We've put some things behind the window to make that maybe less reflective. And just wondering what we can do to stop this poor bird from flying into the window.
Open it.
There's open the window. I mean, you could put a screen on the outside of the window, and that will help. So basically what it's doing is it's seeing a reflection of the trees and in the window glass. And it thinks that it can fly through. So it thinks it's flying into the greenery. So you need to break up that reflection. So you can, like you were doing, putting stuff behind the window. You can put decals on the window. They make these UV ultraviolet light decals that that we don't see very well, but the birds do. And then there's other things you can put in front of the window too, like a screen. Or like lines, there's like tape that you can buy to make like lines on the window, and it breaks up the reflection. There's a number of things. So the American Bird Conservancy has great information with a bunch of different options.
Yeah, and this comes up often on this show. And Rich, did you ever find one that worked for you very well?
Yeah, the American Bird Conservancy does have a solution to that. So check them out. They've been working on that. It's not 100% guaranteed perfect, and it is a little bit challenging to install it, but it works.
All right, here's a thought. Go ahead.
I can say, so for me, we have sliding glass doors in the back, and then our feeders are not too far away from there. And we've had a lot of great success with what they call the Zen blinds. So basically, you're just hanging what we did, the super cheap version, where we got these little sticky hooks and we put them on the outside of the door, and then we hung parachute cord from that every few inches apart. So they do bang around a little bit when it's windy out, but it breaks up that reflection enough, and we have cut down dramatically on the number of birds hitting our window.
All right, Kirsten, good luck with that. You know, we talked about making a cutout of a bird to attract birds. What if you made a cutout of a cat and you put it on your window?
It doesn't work. Mm-mm. People have come up with that in the past. Cats and hawks and owls and big glowing eyes and things like that. It works for a very short period of time, but birds learned that these are like those plastic owls on the rooftop.
But they don't learn, and they smash into windows for hundreds of years. Well, why haven't they learned that lesson? It's painful.
The glass is invisible to them, and they have no way of knowing that's what caused their death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have to make the glass visible to them, which is why there's all these. There's a lot of tools that are available now, a lot of new things that they've been testing, and I think there's some good options.
Okay. All right, let's go to Albany and Woody. You're on.
Hi. I'm going to try this again, but I'm three strikes out with you guys on bird identification.
Wow.
I mean, I had something in mind, and you guys
shoot you down every time. That's Rich. He does that a lot.
Yeah.
He likes to inflict pain on our listeners.
Okay. Well, I recently spent 2 months in Del Mar. What's it called? Well, it's a care center for people that break bones and stuff like that.
Okay. Del Mar Center.
Rehab center.
I live right there in that neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh, man. How do you even know where you're going? That place was hard. I'll never be able to find it again, but I don't ever want to go there again.
Fair
either.
Enough.
So out my window in this place, I could see little tiny birds. They reminded me of what are the birds that are small and they sound like bumblebees buzzing.
Hummingbirds.
And they go into the. It sounded didn't sound like a hummingbird. It didn't look like one. It was mostly black with a red neck and a white breast. And up in the tree there were some similar sized birds, but I couldn't tell their markings because it was up a tree. But I'm telling you, it looked like there were lots of them in the grass around this place, which I think is something else hummingbirds don't go to.
All right, well, it's your neck of the woods, Julie Hart. What do you think?
Yeah, at first when you started describing the black, the red, and the white, that totally sounds like a rose-breasted grosbeak, but that would be the male rose-breasted grosbeak. And they did show up in fairly good numbers in that neighborhood just in the last week and a half or so. But they wouldn't be on the ground, really. So I'm not sure what the ones on the ground were.
Well, they might be doing what the goldfinches were doing. If the flowers on the ground are producing some insects, they might be taking advantage of what's down there. And, you know, just a spontaneous reaction. So
it had to be insects. And even when this one that I saw would go up in a tree, he'd just look around and apparently didn't like what he saw. So he's back down in the grass. He, she, or it.
Huh.
Did it have a large bill, a large, like, pale-colored bill?
And what size was it, do you think?
It was tiny, tiny. I'd swear it was the same size as a hummingbird.
Oh.
Wow.
But that's not
it might be a little bit bigger.
When was this? Just another question for you, though.
This was for almost 2 months, March and April.
Oh, yeah. No, not a
grosbeak. Well, I'm going to say Good job, Woody. Get a picture. Let's see what we can do with the photo.
So what he's trying to say, Woody, is you've done it again. Now this is the third time.
Your batting average ain't so good today.
Or maybe it's very good.
Well, maybe you guys can find my little bird finder fold-out thing, because I lost that before I went out up there.
Oh, rats. Mm.
But anyway, I'll stay in touch. You guys are the only Vox Pop show I like.
What the heck?
All right.
Well, I do shows all week. What all right, Woody, that's enough of you. Thank you.
We love Woody.
3482551. All right, that's the only one you like? Well, we'll see if you get on again. All right, let's... No, I'm kidding, of course. He's welcome every time. Phoebe in Plainfield. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I like to attract bluebirds to my 5 bluebird boxes, and I also get swallows, and I have had trouble this year having any bluebirds come around since it got warmer. They were around a lot the end of the winter. They were at my feeder on my porch. You know, they were looking at the boxes at the end of the winter, but I haven't seen them lately, and now I have a house wren that is starting to make a nest in one of my boxes, and I don't really want a house wren there. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, can I, like, dismantle that nest, or if there's something I could do to attract my bluebirds back?
Okay.
Well, if you're going to do anything with the wren nest, do it now before they lay their eggs. Again, going back to that. And male wrens, house wrens in particular, other wrens do the same, is they will build multiple nests, several dummy nests, and occupy bluebird nest boxes with one of these dummy nests. So if you can open the box and look inside and see if it's an actual nest or just a pile of random sticks thrown in there, if it's the random sticks, you can boot them out. There may be something going on inside that nest box that's discouraging the bluebirds. Perhaps a mouse moved in, or there's some sort of a wasp nest inside there. So check it out on the inside.
Yeah, I've cleaned them out, and I looked at the box. There are a few sticks in there, and they've dismantled. The wrens have dismantled other years.
Okay.
Swallow or bluebird nests, but I just haven't seen the bluebirds around since early April, maybe.
I'm kind of surprised, but keep trying. Keep the nests available for them. They'll get along with the tree swallows fine, but not the wrens.
All right, Phoebe, we got to take a break here. We're overdue. Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. Perhaps you hate most of the shows during the week, but this is the bird show, so please feel free to give us a call. We'll be back. Hey, Zach the engineer, how many Vox Pops a week do you hate? 4, 5?
How many days a week we have?
5. Well, you never know. All the good things must come to an end. All right, let's do some email right now, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Julie Hart is our guest. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today. And, okay, so Friday we did a Weird Food Friday with ChatGPT, and Jim Hendler from RPI was here, and Gail Sokol was here. And Jim Hendler just wrote in, ChatGPT asks, could you discuss the feeding habits and preferred foods of the pileated woodpecker and how backyard bird feeders can be optimized to attract and support this species in Albany? And that's from Jim via ChatGPT.
I didn't know that ChatGPT made questions. I thought you asked questions and it gave you answers.
After the show last Friday, Jim said, "Yeah, by 27, they'll be hosting the show." So
okay, all right.
Yeah. Oh, Woody's tuning in then.
Yeah, yeah, Woody. Yeah, thank God we got rid of that jerk. All right, so what do you
all
think?
All right, so pileated woodpeckers, pileated, both are correct. They prefer, their favorite foods are the carpenter ants. So those are the really big black ants that live in like dying trees.
Yeah.
So that's their preferred. That's what they're hammering for when they excavate large holes in trees. They also do like to eat a lot of suet. So if you have a large enough suet cage, like with this little piece that hangs down so that they have a place to support themselves with their tail,
yeah.
They will come into suet feeders. And so that gets at the second part of the question is what can you do?
Yeah.
So obviously having native plants is something we always say. Leaving standing dead trees is also important. Don't cut them down just if they're dead, you know, as long as they're not going to hurt your house or whatever structure. And then, suet, I would recommend. Do you have anything else, Rich?
No, I think that's right on. Yeah.
Okay.
Keep the dead trees dead.
Okay. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim and ChatGPT for that one. Kathy writes, can you tell me where the ruby-throated hummingbirds go for the winter? Also, I recently learned that birds migrate at night. I was quite surprised to hear this. Do they fly up very high? Do birds migrate and travel in groups or alone? Do either of you care to comment on that? So two separate things.
Yeah.
Let's go to the ruby-throated hummingbird first. Where do they go for the winter?
Usually down to South America, Mexico, Central America, a few overwinter in Florida, the smart ones. They don't have to go so far.
Right.
And, or over the water.
And out over the Caribbean, yes. And yes, Central America, Yucatan Peninsula for ruby-throated hummingbirds. And there's also Florida and Cuba and Caribbean islands.
Okay.
Mainly. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as migrating at night, that's a remarkable phenomenon that's out there. Most of our migrating songbirds fly migration at night.
Yeah.
For reasons, well, it kind of makes sense. They fly during the night, rest and feed during the day when the insects are out and they can see. Also, the air is calm at night. You don't have all that air turbulence. And there's also, kind of fewer hawks that are roaming the skies at night. So, and yes, they do fly high. Mm-hmm. They come down when the first light. You can follow them on radar when you get an X-rad radar on any of those sites. You can actually see the clouds of migrating birds rise up at 7, 8, 9 p.m., fly through the night, and then start descending at 5, 6, 7 a.m.
Okay. All right.
And there's actually a program called BirdCast where they predict migration every night, and then in the following day they tell you how many birds flew over your county and also at what elevation,
so
like what altitude.
Looking through satellites?
Yeah,
or
so they're using those radar
infrared
images Rich just mentioned. Oh, yeah, so it's a really interesting site if she's interested in
that
type of stuff.
This is from Chris in Ulster Park, who is wearing her Vox Pop bird socks. Well done, Chris.
All right.
Chris writes, we have an old willow tree in our yard that needs to come down because dead branches are in danger of falling on our house. But the dead parts of the tree are like a bird condo for many nesting songbirds. I'm afraid of disturbing the nest right now. When would be a safe time of year to have the tree removed so as not to disturb baby birds? And that's from Chris in Ulster Park.
September and October.
Yeah?
Yes.
What happens specifically there? And is it not species specific?
It's not, but you are going to boot a bunch out of their overwintering cubby holes, but so be it. I mean, they're going to have to find another branch to hole up in.
All right. From Jeffrey in Coxsackie, I see an eagle atop a dead tree every morning on my way to work on the thruway. On my way home, I occasionally also get to see him. Such a beautiful bird.
Yep, they love those nice perches and where they can kind of look and hunt from that perch.
Yeah.
We're so lucky to have them after they're almost totally disappeared from our area.
And Andrew wrote in, are bald eagles making a comeback in New York?
Totally.
Yes. Yeah.
That's one of us. We can all mutually pat ourselves on the back for that effort, and it worked.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And let's go back to the phones, and hopefully no one is going to give me a hard time here. We'll go to Susan in Rotterdam. Susan, you're on. Oh, hey, Susan, can you turn the radio down? Can you turn that radio down there, my friend? It's a 20-second delay or so by the time. All right, thanks, Susan. Now, listen, call me back. I'll put you on the show. What the heck? Jim in Stanfordville, you're on.
Stanfordville, I'm on?
That's it.
You're the man.
Yeah. the rose-breasted grosbeak. Mm. We usually stop feeding the bird feeder because in Stamfordville, we're Eastern Dutchess County, we do have bears that start coming out. So I've seen the male in the last 3-4 days. Haven't noticed the female, but I have in the past years. Sort of like the cardinals, kind of more brownish.
Yeah.
But the beak, it's a big beak. It's a gross beak.
Gross mm-hmm. beak?
It's a big beak.
Not gross.
On the, it's a, yeah, but it's definitely the rose-breasted, and okay. it's my favorite. Now we stop feeding. This is the last container of black oil sunflower seeds we'll be getting for them.
Right.
But they also kind of, when they get to the bird feeder, they just kind of take their time,
mm-hmm.
chew on a sunflower and look around and then have another one. Quite okay. impressive.
Nice.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Good to have around.
Any questions?
One other thing. They are beautiful. The phoebe. Every year we get phoebes under our porch roof, and I'm waiting for them to get bigger. They're small. What used to be called gypsy moss, now called sponge moth.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that offends sponges, but
ouch.
The phoebes, when they get bigger, they like to eat them and feed their kids, which mm-hmm. is fine with me because we've got them bad. This is the second year in a row.
Speaking of which, I will interject here that this is a year of fuzzy caterpillars, and the cuckoos are on time with that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow in Peru, Colombia, and Ecuador, the word gets out to the cuckoos overwintering down there that this is a caterpillar year in New York, Massachusetts, and Connecticut.
So we'll see cuckoos.
They're here.
Really?
They're here early.
What do they look like?
Yep.
Oh, the American, we have two kinds. They're kind of long, elongated, snaky-looking like birds that are...
Curved bill.
Yeah.
What color?
Well, they're basically brown above and white below, but that we have one with the all-black bill and another one with a yellow bill, appropriately named the black-bill cuckoo and the yellow-bill cuckoo.
That is amazing. Jim, thanks for the call. I saw a bird not within the last week or two, maybe it might have even been last season, that had a curved bill. I've never seen one before. Is that a common thing?
It's not common with our songbirds, for sure, but the cuckoo is adapted for picking. And they like woolly, fuzzy caterpillars like the woolly bear and also the spongy moth and the tent caterpillar. Mm-hmm. Favorites.
And they have special adaptations that allow them to eat caterpillars with all those spines.
That's amazing. So. Mm-hmm. Now, the cicadas are coming out. This is, the 17-year deal?
Yeah, so they say. Not around here.
Will birds eat those?
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's feast time for birds.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What birds specifically?
Well, any of the insect-eating birds, crows, blue jays, robins, the larger ones for the cicadas, cuckoos.
Interesting.
And even, there is a specialized bird, the kites, K-I-T-E. Get their name for the way they fly, like a kite. Or maybe the kite is named for the bird that flies like a kite. But nonetheless, they will take the cicadas and grasshoppers and dragonflies in the air and actually feast on them as they're floating kite-like through the air.
Oh, that's
beautiful
neat.
Sight. Not for the caterpillars.
And bees birds will eat bees, too, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
That I've seen more bees around. I don't know about you, Julie. We're sort of in the same thing. Seen so many bees this year. Actually,
really?
So many flying insects. It's kind of making me optimistic
for
the future.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
But I mean, that's, that's
maybe
anecdotal.
The effort towards pollinators is working.
Yeah.
The word gets out. People take action. Mm-hmm. Like with the bluebirds and the bald eagle, it made a difference. And so keep it up. Good job.
Let's go to Deborah in Olive Ridge. Deborah, you're on with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie.
Oh, hi. This isn't what I was calling for, but talking about those spongy moth caterpillars.
Yeah.
Ulster County, Dutchess County, Sullivan County is so plagued with them. And as you know, those hairs contain histamine. So, everyone's walking around looking like they went through an Amazon jungle with bite-like marks all over their neck and arms. It's so horrible. I was hoping someone would talk about what kind of bird we could attract here near the Ashokan Reservoir that would eat them because everything is covered with them, but that was touched on. But the reason I called was a couple callers back, it was very intriguing to me. She said she had a female cardinal hitting her window. For many years, I've never seen the females. I always saw the males hit the window because of their territorial aggression. But what I wanted to say was, after trying numerous things, the simple solution was, someone mentioned the screen. It stopped immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was just, I just wanted to say that, like, before mm-hmm. people ran out and spent all kinds of money, that simple screen, it's dark, it cuts down on the reflection, and he never came back after that screen went
that?
Up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they bounce
thank you for
off,
your show.
Too. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for the call. All right, here's one. I'm going to settle a bet here. This is from Josh.
Uh-oh.
I'm in.
About turkey vultures. Now, okay. Josh didn't say how he voted on this, so we're not going to be biased in our responses. Josh wants to know, will a turkey vulture go after a fish? Please let me win this argument with my wife. And that's from Josh.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yep. Yes.
Really?
Sure.
A live one?
No, not a live
oh,
one.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They wouldn't go after a live fish.
Okay.
If there was a dead one, like on the shore, or somebody like a fisherman.
If it's dead, it's fair game.
Yeah.
All right.
But
so
they
I
wouldn't go fishing.
I have a feeling they were talking about a live
me
fish.
Me too. Yeah.
Right. Oh.
Ospreys.
So it would not go for a live fish.
No.
All right.
So wait a minute. Depends on how this bet went.
We don't know. Josh didn't tell us.
Well, I'm with Josh. Josh, tell me what you want me to say.
How do you know you're with Josh? Okay, fair enough. Wow, that's very nice of you. And Josh's wife has a right to be irritated. We've already irritated
I'm
enough
with
people.
No.
Karen in Pittsfield, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I have a question about merlins. I have two merlins in my yard, and I wonder if they're just on their way back to Canada, or if they're going to hang around here. I'm worried about my little songbird.
Mm.
You should be. and the merlin, a remarkable bird. It's a falcon type of predator. And yes, the songbirds are on the menu. But they were an interesting relocation of the merlin distribution. They used to be Northwest Canada. They've come east and down south. Huh. Now they're in not only in your backyard, and there's so many backyards in this area, including downtown city settings.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Albany. They're in Pittsfield. They're in Binghamton. They're in Ithaca. And so, yes, your little songbirds have something to watch out for now.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Diane wrote in from Post and Kill. How can I attract cedar waxwings?
Native plantings.
Mm-hmm.
Berry
such
bushes.
As? Yeah.
Such as the red cedar,
yeah.
Eastern red cedar, and also some of the other berry, such as winterberry or honeysuckle, native honeysuckles. So many choices you can make. And for over winter, the various sumac plants might work.
And apple trees.
And apples, they love that, yes. And they're also insect eaters, so and they do eat bees if they're.
How do they not get stung?
Well, I guess they swallow fast.
A lot of birds that eat bees will catch the bee and then smack the bee, like the stinging end of the bee against a branch.
No way.
And it breaks the stinger off.
Now, I have never seen that I know
yeah.
of. That's very
yeah.
cool. All right, very quickly here, Chris writes in from Port Jervis. Do young robins sometimes drop eggs before they nest and breed? I've seen some eggs on the ground unbroken, like they were laid right there. What do you think? And that's from Chris in Port Jervis.
Not likely, but other birds will do that to the bird nest. And it may cowbirds will eject nests out of a nest that they're parasitizing. They will also throw the baby birds out as well. So... That's their technique of taking whole hog claim on the nest.
What do cowbirds look like? They must be in our neighborhood, and I'm
oh,
yes. I don't
oh,
know.
Yeah.
They don't look. They don't have otters or anything, right?
The female cowbird is one of the most drab-looking birds out there. It's
That's
one
mean.
That has no distinguishing features to speak
mm-hmm.
of. The male cowbird is all black with a chocolate mocha coffee brown head.
Aha!
Mm-hmm.
Now. You ready for the answer from Josh? He
oh,
wrote back in.
Okay.
Place your bets. Did he win or lose?
An
he
osprey.
Wins.
He
Josh
lost.
Is a winner.
Josh is a winner.
Oh.
Josh won. Congratulations to Josh. You've won the home version of this game, which does not exist. All right. Once again, Julie Hart, how do people find out about the Atlas?
Check out ebird.org/atlasny. And if you're in the capital region, I am giving next month's talk for the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club.
hmbc.net. Find
out.
Told
me that earlier.
Yep.
All right. And Rich Guthrie, people want to get in touch with you?
Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E @gmail.com.
Hey, Woody, we're going to be doing the show again next month, so please tune in.
And my man, Woody.
You don't have to bother until then. It'll be the first Tuesday of the month, and we'll see you then. Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service at installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. At the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart for being here today. Thank you for listening. Millions of calls. I'm sorry if we didn't get to yours. And the guy in Burlington, it was on our end. It wasn't your fault. I'll blame Zach on this one, even though it's not his fault either. He's a convenient foil. We'll see you tomorrow. Matthew Goodemode will be here. We'll talk physical therapy.